You're listening to the Vertical Access Podcast. VA is the college-age community of High Street Baptist Church in Springfield, Missouri. For more information, go to highstreet.org.
Glad you're here tonight. For all of our guests who are here tonight, welcome. I hope you have a great experience. I hope you get to meet some really friendly people. And most importantly, I hope you, when you leave here tonight, you felt like you met with God and you got to experience His presence in maybe a way that you never have before. So tonight, what we're doing is we're actually starting a new series. Here at VA, what we like to do is we probably take about 5 or 6 weeks and we go series by series. And so sometimes we'll take topics that are important, like dating and relationships or how to make life decisions. You know, we just got done with a series called Big Questions, where we tackled some of the biggest questions you're going to face in your faith journey. And sometimes we like to go through either books of the Bible or passages of the Bible. And that's what our series is tonight that we're starting. We're going to be going through Ephesians chapter 1. Now, here's how I kind of think about this series. So if you have a Bible with you tonight, go ahead and flip to Ephesians. Ironically, Ephesians 2, all right? Ephesians 2, we're going to be looking at verses 1 through 5. It'll make sense here in a little bit. And if you don't have a Bible with you, have no fear. We'll have the verses on the screen for you. Or if you don't own a Bible, we've got free ones on the table on your way out. Grab one. It's our gift to you. Take it and read it. It'll be good for you. We are going to be going through this series, and the way I look at it is this. Let me ask you this question. How many of y'all, what is the biggest gift? Think about the biggest gift you've ever received. The biggest gift. So maybe for some of you, that was like a laptop. How many of you ever received a laptop as a gift? Anyone, you've maybe graduated high school, you got a laptop. All right, what about, how many of you ever received like a car as a gift? You're like, okay, it was a car, but it was maybe like a $500 car, and you're still like, it's got wheels and it goes. That's all that matters. I remember the biggest gift I've ever received was a laptop. How many of y'all went to like your project graduation when you graduated? There's always like that grand prize that you never win, but like you just like, oh, someone else won it, whatever. Let's go home, I'm exhausted. Well, I actually won the grand prize. It was a laptop, right? It's pretty awesome. And I won that, but the biggest gift I've ever given, okay, the biggest gift I've ever given was a diamond ring, all right? So, yeah, exactly. For those of you who don't know, my lovely wife Sarah is over here, and if you look at her left hand, there is a ring that cost a lot. A lot of money. Yeah, Beyonce, right? She did that. I did that with her. I was so proud. It was good. And that was the biggest ring that, our biggest, not, biggest gift I've ever given someone in my life. And I remember when I bought it. That was a biggest purchase I ever made in my life up until that point. You know, I was going to propose to Sarah. I was like, you gotta have something to propose with, a gift to give as a token of your love and your commitment. And I have no money, so that proves that I do love you now. And so I remember there was about a week from when I bought the ring to when I gave her the ring. And she accepted it, thankfully. But what happened is every night, I remember the very first night I got that ring, I took it home and I just stared at it. I was like, how can this thing be worth so much money, number one? But then I kept looking at it, and I would just stare at the diamond, and I was captivated by this diamond because every way you moved it, light reflected differently off of it. And some of you girls are like, I want a diamond. And it just, every which way, it just reflected and looked differently. And so literally, I was just staring at it. Like, I needed one of those, like, monocles so I could just, like, get in there and I was just captivated by this thing. So I would come home after work and I would just stare at it and freak out a little bit because I was about to commit the rest of my life to a person. But the more I looked at it, like I started to see like there was a little blemish on the inside. I was like, whoa, did I get like gypped? Like there's this little dark thing in there. And I discovered as I studied more about diamonds, there's these things called feathers in a diamond. It's almost like the fingerprint of a diamond. Each one has these carbon little flex in there and they show up and they're all unique. Every diamond, that's how you know you get your diamond back. You look, all right, is mine got this thing in there? And I had no idea, but the more I studied, the more I looked at this thing, the more I appreciated it, the more like in awe I was of this thing that I was about to give to Sarah. And so there's this thing about big gifts that we get or we give, that the more we look at it, the more we think about it, the more we understand these gifts, really the more we appreciate it. Right? And maybe you don't know that until the car you're driving now breaks down and then you get a new car. You're like, man, the more I understand how important having a car is, that gift, I appreciate it a lot more. So here's what we believe as Christians. So tonight, if you're not a Christian here, welcome. I'm so glad you're here. You're always welcome. But here's what I want you to know, what we believe. We believe that the single greatest gift a person could receive is to know their creator and have a relationship with him. That's it. That's the biggest gift anybody could receive, bigger than an inheritance, bigger than any physical thing that you could ever dream of. To know your creator and to be in relationship with him is the biggest. Now here's why we're going through Ephesians 1. It's because I realize when I look out, here's a bunch of Christians. I see a bunch of Christians living their lives, and they should know this, that they've got the most precious gift on the face of the earth. But I see so many Christians living boring, dispassionate, broken, half-hearted lives. And I think, why? Why is that? And the more I think of it, it's because I think two things. Number one, they have forgotten how precious the gift they have received of a relationship with God is. They've either forgotten it or neglected it or don't care that much anymore about it, or they don't understand. They haven't studied it enough. They don't understand how incredible this gift is. And so we are going to go through these verses. And Paul, the apostle who was a church planner in the early days of the church, is going to explain to us what this gift is, how it took place, certain things about it, the realities of who we are in light of our relationship with God. And my hope is that the more you and I understand, the more we remember how precious this gift is, the more we break free from this darkness of sin in our lives. So that's why it's called Ephesians, a light in the dark, because just like that diamond, every time I turned it and the light reflected in a new way, every time we look at our relationship with God and we get a new insight, it's more light that shines into our heart, more light that shines into our life and expels the darkness within us. And so that's why we're going through Ephesians. Now, tonight, we are starting in Ephesians chapter 2, because before you can truly understand the light, before you can truly understand the good news, you have to first understand the dark and the bad news. Because good news is inherently good because it invades dark places, because it invades bad places. And so we're going to begin tonight by talking about the problem that you and I face as fellow human beings. So let me start with this, okay? A few years ago, I was given the opportunity to go on a mission trip to Germany. Anybody here in the room go on that trip with me? Any of y'all still here? Okay, good. A few of y'all went to Germany with me. Now, through a long series of events, there ended up one of those nights in Germany that it was 2:30 in the morning, and I was stranded at a gas station with a guy who was having a kidney stone, doubled over in pain, and I got him in the van because my phone wasn't working and I couldn't call the missionary, and we got lost in this town in Germany trying to make it to the hospital. This is real life. And so I was freaking out because I don't know German, and this guy's like throwing up, he's in so much pain. And we go to this gas station, and this guy speaks English and he has a cell phone. So I'm like, hey, call this number. And he calls it, and I immediately realize this guy is just wasted out of his mind, just drunk. So the missionary picks up the phone to drunk guy telling him that I've got a guy here who's stranded. He needs your help. It's funnier to me, I guess, than this to y'all. I don't know. It wasn't funny that night. But anyway, so at the last moment, this guy, as I'm hanging up, I'm like, thank you so much. You have no idea. And he's like, oh, no problem, man. You know, that's not Jamaican, but German for some reason. But maybe I need some water. That'll clear up the German for me. I go in to give this guy, because the guy goes to give me a bro hug, and I'm just, my mind is, it's 2:30, guy's puking because he's in so much pain, I just give him the bro hug back. But when I leave, I notice that his hand is like oozing and like scabbed over and just nasty, right? But I'm so, and some of you are like, I didn't come for this tonight, Brian. It's okay. Bear with me. It's going to get worse. And as I pull away, I notice how disgusting it was, but I just didn't even care. Everything was fine. Guy gets taken care of. A lot of more funny moments that night with kidney stones. For those of you who don't know what it's all about, look it up on Wikipedia. You'll understand later. And then about 6 weeks later, I started to get this like itchy feeling on my elbows, like both of them. And I was like, that's weird. Like, and before I knew it, it started spreading down my arm. Then on like my hands, my fingers. So I go to the doctor on Friday night, on a Friday afternoon. I'm like, doctor, this is like starting to really burn and itch, and it's a rash. It's spreading. What do I do? And it got worse and worse. And the doctor looks at it, and I immediately got worried because he does this. Huh. Okay, that doesn't elicit a lot of confidence in me as the patient, all right? And he begins to investigate and look more. And he's like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you this prescription. It's probably just something you were outside, got into something. Maybe you leaned back with your elbows in the grass, and it's going to go away. So this is going to help with the pain. It'll just go through its cycle, and it'll be gone. I'm like, okay, I'll take it. Now, that night, I was in so much pain. Like, This feeling, if I could describe it to you, was like thousands of needles poking me in the hands constantly. Like if your foot or your leg ever fallen asleep and that pins and needles feeling when it's waking up, it was like that constantly. And so I got that cream that doctor gave me and I just like lathered myself. And I was like, I mean, I was religious about this, right? Like I was like, every 4 hours on the dot, I was creaming up, right? And I was like, this is gonna go away. I can't take this anymore. And it was just, it was so rough. But the cream did nothing. No matter how hard I tried, and I was good. Sarah was like, don't scratch. I'm like, okay, I didn't scratch. I wanted to like claw my hands off. It hurt so bad, but I didn't. Because I was trying so hard to get it to go away. That night, and it gets worse at night. Every night it would just intensify and get even worse. It got so bad that I got an ice pack out of our fridge and I went to bed with an ice pack in my hands like this, just to ease the pain a little bit. I woke up in the middle of the night, my hands were completely numb from the ice pack, which having your hands numb hurts. But I didn't care because it was relief from the pins and needles, right? So I woke up numb and I was like, oh, thank God my hands are numb right now, right? But even though I numbed out the pain, it just came right back. Like it helped for a little bit, but it came right back. So Monday came, I was like, doctor, this is getting worse. It's not getting better, it's getting worse. And then he tells me this. And at this point, he goes and pulls out a book and he starts looking through pictures. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I've got to get a new doctor. But he says, okay, Brian, I think you've got what's called scabies. Now, when he told me you've got scabies, my initial reaction is like, isn't that an STD? And he said, no, tell your wife it's not, you're fine. And I was like, okay, good. I was worried for a sec, doc. He says, no, scabies, it's this little mite and it kind of gets in your skin and burrows through there and there's probably thousands of them on you right now. My heart starts beating, I'm like freaking out. All right, here, actually, I've got a picture for you. This is what a scabies mite looks like. So thousands of those were burrowing through my skin for about 6 weeks, okay? All right, you can take it away because that's making me have flashbacks. But once the doctor correctly diagnosed the problem, he then gave me the cure to the problem, which was another cream that I had to cover head to toe and sit in for 5 hours while I literally cleaned every scrap of clothing in our entire house. And after that, I got cured. I got healed. The doctor diagnosed it correctly, gave me the right cure, then I took the medicine and everything got better. Eventually, right? So to this day, you can shake my hand. Some of you are like, I shook that guy's hand today. I'm gonna get scabies. No, you're not. I'm clean, I promise, quarantined, everything. But here's the problem, right? The problem was I went through a lot of unnecessary pain because the doctor did not diagnose the problem correctly. It was a lot of pain that weekend. I remember being so angry when I realized the doctor had no clue what he was talking about that Friday. And I went through a lot of pain because of a misdiagnosis led to the wrong cure, led to more suffering on my part. Now, the reason why I tell you this story is because life is a lot like this. All of us, at some level, feel the brokenness and pain of life. Whether you're a Christian or whether you're not, all of us know that there's a problem. We know that something's not right. We know that maybe there's something that this life should be. We might not even know what it is, but we know there's a gap between where I am and what this thing should be. And we inherently know deep within us that something about this world is broken and something is wrong. And so for years, so many of us go through pain and brokenness. And we try to find all of these cures to fix it. Some of us will try really hard and be really good religious people, just like I was, but putting the cream on every 4 hours, right, religiously. And it doesn't do anything. Other people will go and they'll try to numb out the pain. They'll numb it with relationships, with always having a girlfriend or always having a boyfriend. They'll numb it by getting wasted or doing all these things to just make the pain go away for at least a little bit, but it always comes back. And some people just try to neglect it. They just try to dismiss it. They just try to pretend like it's not actually there and everything's okay. But the reality is that none of us can escape, that all of us feel the pain. All of us feel the brokenness, that longing for something better that this life should be. Even those of you tonight who are Christians and you say, Brian, I know what the problem is. If you're really honest with yourself, a lot of the time you live your life as if you don't know what the problem is or if you're still defined and stuck in that problem. And so what I've realized is when we misdiagnose life's problem, we never find the cure. So that's the big idea for tonight. And this is going to set up our entire series because, again, we can't talk about the good, precious gift of God's presence with us, himself with us, if we don't first understand the problem that that gift addresses. So let me say this again one more time so you can, if you're taking down notes, write this down. If we misdiagnose life's problem, we'll never find the cure. And so many people go throughout life trying and seeking and looking for the cure, and they never find it because they never truly understood the problem to begin with. Now, luckily, I asked you to turn to Ephesians 2, 1 through 5, because in this passage, the Apostle Paul gets crystal clear about how God views the problem of humanity. See, because we are in this mess together, we don't have the perspective we need to evaluate and understand the problem, but God sees all of it. He is separate from it, and he clearly sees what the problem is, and he lets us know in Ephesians chapter 2. So take a look at that with me. Ephesians 2, 1 says this, "And you were dead in the trespasses and sins in which you once walked, following the course of this world, following the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work in the sons of disobedience, among whom we all once lived in the passions of our flesh, carrying out the desires of the body and the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, like the rest of mankind." And so Paul begins in this verse, and he says, so crystal clear, so perfect, he says, "And you were dead." Now, that's a funny statement because the people he was writing to, surely weren't physically dead. He expected them to read this letter, so there was something else going on. There was some other kind of deadness that they were experiencing. And what Paul says is that they were spiritually dead. He says, the very first thing you need to know before I can get to the good news, the very first thing you need to know if you really want the cure is you've got to correctly diagnose the problem. And the problem is this, is that every single one of us, when we were born into this world, were born spiritually stillborn, dead. Now, what that means is our ability to know God, the ability for the eyes of our heart to see, recognize, and enjoy our Creator, were shut and closed. If a dead person were here before us and they were lying on the ground or on in a coffin, their eyes would be closed because as your body ceases to exist and ceases to live, as the organs begin to lose their function, your eyes close and everything goes black and dark and there is no longer life. And what Paul says is the reality of the problem, the correct diagnosis of all of humanity's problem is spiritually in our hearts, the eyes are shut. The heart is dark. We are in the dark, blindly groping around, looking for anything and everything to cure the problem. But because we are blind, anything that we come across will not work. We are in the dark and God is in the light. We are spiritually dead. He is spiritually alive and is the source of life. And all of us humans born into this world are born into it with a condition of deadness in our heart. We can't see God because our eyes are closed. We can't know God because our heart is shut off to him. We can't breathe and think and cherish any gift that God may give us to the full abundance of what it is because we don't know this God. We can't see him, understand him, figure him out, love him, relate to him, seek him because our eyes are shut. And we are dead spiritually. And this is the fundamental problem, is that between you and I, there is a great separation between us and God. There is a great separation. He is in the light and we are in the dark. And he is the only one that could ever truly satisfy us. To know him and love him is the only cure to what we have in this world. It's what we were designed to do. It's what fulfills us the most. But because we are separated and we are in the dark, we blindly wander from thing to thing or person to person, some fake cure to another fake cure, hoping that this will be the thing that works, and all of them fail us time and time again. But Paul doesn't stop there. He says, now let me show you. This is the reality. The problem is this. The diagnosis is spiritually you are dead, not breathing, no life. But he says it doesn't stop there. Let me explain to you. He says, let me flesh this out a little bit more for you. He goes, and you were dead. How? In the trespasses and sins in which you once walked. Now, this is a very controversial statement in our day, right? Because we are a society, and in our Western individualistic mindset, we don't want to talk about breaking laws, about trespassing, about going into areas and doing things that our Creator has asked us not to do. But the reality is, all of us know that we're broken. There's no person in this room tonight who would say that morality is totally relativistic to every single culture, time, and person. Because if it was rape 100 years ago, it's still rape today, right? If it was genocide 100 years ago, it's still genocide today. Right, so we all understand at the end of the day that there's this awareness of brokenness. The problem is, it's always brokenness for them, not for me. They're the trespassers, I'm not. They're the sinners, I'm not. I'm okay. But if we're honest, there's not as nearly a big of a gap between them and between myself as I'd like to admit. And he says, how do you know that you're spiritually dead? Because at the end of the day, you know there is real guilt for the sins and trespasses that you have committed in this life. You would be a fool today to get up and say, I've never hurt someone. That I have a clear conscience about never lying or misleading someone or leading someone on. I've never hurt someone. I've never offended anyone. I'm a good person. We would say, you're a prideful person, which is probably the greatest sin, self-righteousness. And so all of us are dead in trespasses and sins, but he doesn't stop there. He goes on. He says, in which you once walked, following the course of this world and following the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work in the sons of disobedience. So he says, not only were you trespassing and were you sinning, he says, you were also following the script that was given to you. The reality is, all of this world around us dictates to us what our life should look like. You dress the way you dress because someone or something dictated to you that this is what normal looks like. The problem is, it's one thing about dress, but it's another thing when you start talking about morality or life decisions or relationship decisions. And it says the deadness of your life was seen in the fact that at some point in your life, you came to a decision. God calls me to live this way, but everyone else says it's okay to live this way. And I went with everyone else, not with what God has called me to do. And in that moment, we followed the course of this world. In that moment, we followed the spirit that is at work in the sons of disobedience. And that's proof of our deadness. He doesn't stop even there. He goes on and he says this. Among whom we all once lived, verse 3, in the passions of our flesh, carrying out the desires of the body and the mind, and were by nature children of wrath like the rest of mankind. This verse, Paul talks about the fact that our spiritual deadness leads us to unbridled passion, unbridled desire. If you've ever heard the word lust in the Bible, typically we connect lust with sexual sin, but lust is simply this, it's unbridled desire. So think about a bit in a horse's mouth. As you put the bit in the horse's mouth, you now have control over the horse to guide or lead it wherever you want. And when our desires are unbridled, it means there is no control over them. It's whatever we want, we get. It's hedonism at its finest. It's like going to Golden Corral and loading up. Right, and if you've ever been to Lambert's or you've been to that buffet, there's that moment when you know you need to stop, and then there's like two plates later. And you enjoy that bite in the moment, that last bite that you know is the final straw. You enjoy it as you chew it and as it goes down, but then you sit back and you realize, I'm in trouble, right? And as you walk at the door, you feel the unbridled desire and lust of your stomach. Now, it seems silly, but that's a perfect illustration of what Paul is talking about. He says, the deadness of our hearts lead us to have zero control over the desires that ultimately will consume us. And it's one thing to kind of laugh about when we talk about food, but it's a whole other thing when we start talking about drink or sex or gossip or any number of infinite things that can consume your desires. And so he paints a very bleak picture about the deadness of our hearts and our inability to see and know our Creator and the result thereof. Now, some of you tonight, I think, struggle with thoughts like this. Some of you probably grew up in church and you've been around in church for your whole life. And for you, when a guy like me gets up to talk about this, it's hard for you to connect with this because you never remember a time that you weren't a Christian. Like, you never remember a time of unbridled desire. You never remember a time of following the course of the world. And so though you know you were sinful, for you as a six-year-old when you became a Christian and you got baptized, there was never a moment that you just went and lived in the quote-unquote world. And it's hard for you to connect with this, but here's what I want you to realize. I think a lot of you, and I included tonight, don't live passionate lives, happy, joy-filled lives in the presence of God with the gift of salvation because we don't understand how dead, in fact, we were. Okay, even as a six-year-old, here's what happens. Guys like me try to get up here and prove to you how bad you are to make you appreciate salvation more, and they say this. These verses, don't you know that if Jesus never would have met you, this is what you would have become? How many of you have ever heard something like that before? Like, if Jesus wouldn't have saved you and forgiven you and made you new, don't you know that you would have done all of these things? So when you think about salvation, think about how grateful you are that you didn't become like this. And I say, no, forget all of that. That's a bunch of nonsense. This is who you were. You know what none of us remember tonight? When you were 14 months old, you flipped out one day because your mom wouldn't let you play with the remote control, right? And at the time, it was just a 14-year-old freaking out. But you know what that was? That was a sinful 14-month-old heart. Because in that moment, the 14-month-old child version of you said, I want the remote. I want to watch Thomas the Train. Now I'm speaking about my son, all right? This is, I want that remote. And if I can't get it, I'm going to freak out. I'm going to throw myself on the ground. I'm going to cry. I'm going to scream. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get that remote. What is that? That's lust of the heart of a 14-month-old. It's unbridled desire. It's saying, I don't care what you say, I will not be stopped by anybody of what I want. It was the same thing as true of you as a six-year-old. See, don't for a moment think that this is what would have happened if God never saved you. No, this is what was happening before you met Jesus. This is who you were. It doesn't matter if you came to Christ as a 40-year-old or as a 5-year-old. This was the reality of your life. This is what God saved you from. He saved you from unbridled desire. He saved you from things that would ultimately destroy you. He saved you from things that were going to corrupt your heart and corrupt your mind, that were corrupting your heart and were corrupting your mind. Because even as a six-year-old, you were a dead six-year-old. Even as a 12-year-old, you were a dead 12-year-old. Because none of us are born as Christians. None of us are born into this world knowing and seeking God and having a relationship with God. All of us are cast and born in the darkness of the brokenness of this world. Tonight, here's what you got to know. If you're not a Christian tonight, you don't have to agree or believe anything I'm saying right now, but this is what I ask you to do. Consider that maybe, just maybe, all of the issues of your life, all of the brokenness of your life that you feel like you deal with, or maybe just that internal nagging of, is there something more? Maybe that wasn't just a circumstance that you haven't gotten right yet, or maybe that just wasn't just a symptom of, if I could just find the right person to be with. What if all of these things that you just deal with on a regular basis, you try to neglect, but all of these things that seem to be a reality of your life, what if they were all symptoms pointing to a much deeper issue? What if instead of being disconnected, they were all very much so connected? And that deeper issue is the fact that you are disconnected from your Creator. That the one thing that could satisfy you, you have no connection to. How would that change the way you go about living your life or go about trying to address or solve these issues in your life? I think it would change a lot. Here's the reality, guys. We have to know the problem that we all face, the correct diagnosis. If you ever want to find the cure, if you ever want to live a strong, impassioned, joy-filled life, you must first come to the point where you realize I was or I am dead. And I am disconnected from God. My eyes of my heart are closed and I cannot see or know him. But the story doesn't stop there. Because we go on in verse number 4, after giving us all this bad news, he says this, the Apostle Paul says, but God, being rich in mercy, meaning if there was ever a man who was wealthy, if there was ever one who was wealthy, God had unending amounts and vast wealth in mercy and love.
God being rich in mercy because of the great love with which he loved us. That means he cares about you. You are not indifferent to him. He knows you. He has a plan for you. He loves you because of the great love with which he loved us. Verse 5, even when we were dead, yes, you were dead, but even in your deadness and in your trespasses, here's the key, made us alive together with Christ. He says, God, in his incredible, unfathomable love for you, made you alive with Christ. So let's look at the first part, the love part. He says, in with which the love he has loved you. You know what that means? That means past tense. He's saying God has already loved you. He's already proven his love to you. When Paul wrote this to the Ephesians, he's saying, in the past, Ephesians, in the past, church, God has shown his love to you. What does that mean? What are you talking about, Paul? He says elsewhere that while we were yet sinners, Christ, God showed his love to us and that Christ died for us. See, let's be very clear about this tonight, okay? The cross is not just a symbol. Okay, don't miss this, right? I promise you, we've been doing this for a whole year now. If you didn't listen to a thing I said, this is the one thing I want you to understand, okay? The cross is not just a symbol. It's not just a good idea. It's not just something to aspire to. It's not just an example of sacrificial love. It's not just a place where a righteous man died. It's not just a place where a martyr gave up his life. No, he says, on the cross, there was a divine transaction between God and humanity. And God, the creator of all that there is, proves his love for us by sending his son to receive the penalty that we deserved. Because ultimately, what God understands is that the result, the consequence of our deadness spiritually is eternal deadness and separation. If in this temporal moment of life we are separated from God, then when we in fact physically die, there is eternal separation from God. And in his love, God sends his son to endure that penalty for us. So don't miss this. On the cross, when Jesus was being crucified and dying, he wasn't just dying for himself or for the world, he was dying for you in your place. I belonged on that cross. On the cross, Jesus became a pedophile so that pedophiles may become sons of God. On the cross, Jesus became a liar so that liars may become daughters and sons of God. On the cross, Jesus became a porn addict so that you and I and all of us can become free from our addiction to pornography, so that we could become sons and daughters of the Most High God. He receives the penalty that we deserve so that we can be freed from the darkness. It's the gospel. If the problem, the correct diagnosis is death, then the cure, the prescription that we need is the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ in our place. And if we look to the cross and we trust in the cross and we place ourselves at the feet of the cross, then and only then, do we become made alive together with him. And that's the incredible thing, right? In the very next verse, he says, he made us alive together with Christ. Why was it with Christ? Because it was by the cross. Without the cross, we remain dead. But because of the cross, we come to life. And this is the most incredible part. What is the cure? The cure is by the cross, be brought to life. I've used this illustration before. I'm going to do it again because I think it's so powerful. Okay, if I am in my bedroom and I am in the deeps of my sleep, the depth of my sleep. Deeps is not a word. If I'm in the depth of my sleep, nothing's going to wake me up. Nothing. Our house could be burning down. I'm snoozing, all right? The only thing that's going to wake me up is if someone comes into my room, shakes me, slaps me, says, Brian, wake up! And then a burst of energy comes through my heart. My eyes jolt open and I punch them in the face, right? And that's the picture of salvation. A dead, spiritually dead person walking around this world, wandering in the dark, looking and hoping for the cure, but finding nothing. And one day God goes and grabs their dead heart and goes, wake up! And he shakes them and he slaps them in the face, if you were like me. And he breathed breath into their life and their heart, their spiritual heart starts pumping and blood starts flowing. And for the first time, the eyes of their heart open up and they see God for who he is. They recognize him for who he is and they give all of themselves to him. And that's what it means to be saved.
That's what salvation is. Salvation is not less than being forgiven. It's not less than having your sins cleansed from you. But the ultimate joy, the ultimate gift of salvation is that we were disconnected from God, but now we are reunited with our Creator. It's being brought together with God through Christ. That's salvation. And so if our problem is that we are disconnected from our Creator, the only one who can satisfy us, the only cure then is to be reunited with Him through Christ. And that's the gospel. All of these things we deal with, they're symptoms of the greater issue, which is death. And the only cure is to be brought back to life through the gospel and be reunited with our Creator. But here's the reality that I know. It does us no good if we have a correct diagnosis and have the right cure if we don't take our medicine. How many of you have been to the doctor and you've gone in and you've had some kind of like bacteria or growing in your lungs or you had some like anything and they give you antibiotics? And you know what the doctor always tells you when he gives you antibiotics? He says, make sure you take all of the antibiotics because here's what's wrong with you. Here's the thing that's going to cure you. But if you don't take all of your medicine, it's going to come back. And if you're like me, you've taken that medicine for 3 or 4 days and then you just kind of quit because you're like, I feel better. I don't need to take these pills that are making me choke every time I take it. I'm fine. And then like 2 days later, you're like twice as miserable as you were beforehand. It's like, that doctor's a liar. No, he's not a liar. You didn't take your medicine. See, having the right diagnosis and having the right cure doesn't matter whatsoever unless we actually apply it to our lives. I can't encourage you enough in this next point. What does it look like for you and I to take God's medicine? What does it look like to understand that God has diagnosed us as spiritually dead? He has given us the cure of being reunited, reconnected with Him through faith in the gospel. What does it look like to take it, to receive it? Even that gift that I gave to Sarah, right? That wedding ring that I gave to her, it did not become her ring until she placed it on her finger and she said, yes, I do. And publicly she declared. Now, I was the one that moved to her first, right? She didn't just come and say, Brian, marry me. No, I proposed, I invited, I brought her in. But she said yes, and she put that ring on, and she told the whole world on Facebook, I'm engaged, right? So what does it look like for us to take the medicine? Let me put it even clearer. How do you and I need to respond in faith? Because this is a message, right? Spiritually dead, spiritually alive, walking in our sins, walking with Christ in joy. This is a message that demands a response. You will either draw closer to your Creator God or you will push away. So what does it look like for you to respond in faith and take the medicine? Tonight, if you're a Christian, it would look something like this. It would be this moment where just for a few moments after I'm done, I'll be done here in just about 2 or 3 minutes, to get down on your face before the Lord and just thank Him for bringing you to life. To just thank Him that you brought me to life as a 6-year-old. That wasn't who I was going to become. That's who I was. I was dead. I had no hope. And thank you, God. When was the last time you just poured out your soul in gratitude to our Creator for bringing you to life and reconnecting you with Himself through Christ? And maybe responding in faith for you tonight, if you're a believer, looks like this. What can we hold back from the God who has made us alive? How crazy is this? Brian, I brought you to life. I'm asking you to do this. Thanks for bringing me to life, God. I think I'll pass. Don't you understand that you were dead if it wasn't for me? Yeah, but that sounds like it's going to be really hard. I'm God. I'm God. If it wasn't for me, there would be no you. Yeah, but I think I'm doing me all right now. And it sounds so silly, but isn't that what we do? What part of our life can we not give up to our Creator? He has brought us to life. He has made us new. He has given us life to our dead heart. What can we hold back? What is that thing that God is asking you to give up right now? What is that thing that God is asking you to do right now? What is that thing that you know is not right that you need to let go of, but you're scared? What is that thing that you know you need to talk to someone about, but you're just too scared to go and do it? Tonight, we're going to give you an opportunity to deal with that. We're going to have people in the back of the room who want to pray for you about that. They're not going to hammer you with 100 questions. They just want to be there to encourage you, to help walk you through that so you can respond in faith and take the medicine and find the cure. And tonight, if you're not a Christian, my invitation is very simple, is this. Don't push Jesus away, draw to him. I really believe that in our midst, there are probably people here who know they need to take that step of faith. They need to respond in faith. They need to go public with what God is doing in their life. Taking the medicine for you looks like declaring, this is who I am. This is the work that God's doing in my life. I do believe in the gospel. I do believe in Jesus, and I want him to be the center of my life. Tonight, would you go and pray with someone about that? Would you go and talk to someone about that and let them encourage you in that new life? Because here's the reality, and this is what I know. If we misdiagnose life's problem, we'll never find the cure. Okay, stand with me for a closing prayer, would you? Father, we thank you that tonight you didn't just let us stay in our dead state, but that in love you came to us. In love you died on the cross for us. In love you pursued us. And so tonight I pray for all of us in the room that you would let us take the medicine, that you would move in us to respond in faith. I pray for those who are Christians and there's something they need to let go. God, give them grace to let that go. I pray for the Christians who they know there's something they need to change. They know there's something they need to talk to someone about. Move in their heart right now to take the medicine and to turn to you, to confess their sin, to repent of it, and to walk with you. Lord, I pray for those who aren't Christians that you would draw them, that you would break their hearts of their self-reliance, and that you would show them the hope of the gospel, and that you would help them to take the medicine of the gospel to find the cure for life. Lord, that's what you offer us tonight, is life. Let us accept it. Let us love it. Let us cherish it till the day we die. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. So this is your...
Thanks for listening to the Vertical Access Podcast. If you'd like to know more about VA, check out highstreet.org.